savage was supposed to keep you both alive through mayhem and madness.
I know, priestess, but the spell is not compromised of magic woven solely through a wizard's skill, and thus unravelable by one of equal skill. This spell has been embodied in three objects of power, artifacts, and the spell can only be undone by finding at least two of these.
And why haven't you already done so?
Well, we tried.
And?
And Savage was eaten by a dragon.
Is that an excuse?
Lorelei demanded.
It's a good one, said Helen.
The dragon ate my homework,
Amy said and chuckled.
This isn't funny,
Lorelei snarled.
No, but her comment was, Helen explained helpfully, unsuccessfully hiding her laughter.
I don't understand,
Entropy said, trying to sort through Helen's thoughts for the concept of dogs and homework.
Don't worry about understanding their nonsense,
Lorelei said.
It's not nonsense, it's humor, which you completely don't understand.
There is nothing I don't understand,
she objected.
How about punctuated equilibrium?
Helen posed.
Or Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, Magnus offered.
Why can't you wear white after Labor Day?
Amy tried. Helen gave her a quizzical look.
What? I've always wanted to know.
Seems so stupid and arbitrary to me.
Fine. There are things I don't understand. Like why you aren't answering my questions, Entropy.
That's a very unwieldy name. Can't we call in something else?
Asked Amy. And it's very unromantic. I can't scream Entropy at the top of my lungs with my legs wrapped around his waist. People would think I was fucking a physicist or something.
Which you have,
Amy pointed out.
While I was drugged, protested Magnus.
But it's not something I'm proud of, Helen said.
Which part, the drugging or the sexing?
Okay, I guess it is something I'm proud of, Helen smirked.
Fine, Lorelei said. We can call him Steve. Is that better?
Steve? He's a dark elf with brooding good looks. We can't call him Steve,
Helen objected.
How about Trent? Suggested Amy. It sounds kind of like Entropy.
I like Trent.
Trent chimed in.
Nobody asked you,
shot back Lorelei.
Chapter 3.
Having settled the dark elf naming crisis of 14, Lorelei continued her interrogation.
So how did Savage get eaten by a dragon?
Well, the dragon opened up his jaws and gulped him down. Digestive acids did the rest, I imagine.
But how did you let this happen?
Lorelei corrected.
Well, we were in the magic-rich dimension, and we killed a couple of unicorns and sacrificed them to Cthulhu.
You killed unicorns?
Amy said, tears welling up in her eyes.
Helen, you can't eat this guy.
Come on, Amy. These guys are so evil, every other universe ganged up on them to magically seal them off. What do you think we're going to hear about? Unicorns and rainbows?
Sorry, wrong expression.
Hugs and puppies? Oh, come on, Amy. Come back. You can't be sad. We're rich, remember?
I'd better go after her,
Magnus said to the group and went after his loudly weeping girlfriend.
She shouldn't be all that sad. Unicorns are dicks, in my experience,
Trent said. So how did you sacrifice the unicorns? Helen asked.
Well, we tied them to a stone altar we constructed.
No one cares about a couple of routine sacrifices.
I care, said Helen.
I don't care about a couple of mundane sacrifices,
Lorelei corrected.
After we sacrificed the unicorns, we attempted to unravel the spell. When we couldn't, we tried again in case we'd done something wrong. Then we analyzed the spell and found out how it's anchored. Unfortunately, by this time, our magic workings, and we were slinging some powerful spells, so we drew the magic users of that dimension. And they were sharp. Powerful. We fought. I myself killed several of them as they had almost no psychic defenses. Heat death cast a spell to get us to the dimension of the dragon, but was slain by a combination of lightning strikes, fireballs, and a magically conjured owlbear. Overloaded his defenses, and the owlbear ripped his arms off and bit his head off with his beak. It was gruesome. We couldn't help because we were already in transit. We arrived in the new Earth, with no idea where we were except that somewhere in the vicinity would be a dragon guarding a powerful artifact. Unfortunately, the only one of us who knew more than that had recently been disarmed. Then I sensed an alien yet powerful mind and shouted a warning. Savage leapt into the air and narrowly escaped being crisped by the dragon's flame. Unfortunately, he never came down, as the dragon battered him like a cat with a ball of wool. I saw him splatter against the rocks and began running and casting the spell to transport back, homing in on you. And luckily I fell into the pool which put out the fire in my armor. But not, glancing at Helen, the fire in my heart.
Ah, said Helen, blushing, for perhaps the third or fourth time in her life.
You let a dragon chase you with your tail between your legs.
You've got a tail? Helen asked.
Metaphorical tail, Lorelei corrected. I was on fire, priestess.
That's a poor excuse.
I think it's a good excuse, Helen said.
I am starting to get seriously peeved at you, Lorelei said.
You're not going to kill me, so stop giving me that look, Helen said, ignoring a glare that had reduced lesser men and elves to tears.
You like me, she sing-songed.
Lorelei fumed silently.
This is what comes of getting attached to one's pets, she thought to herself. I suppose it is a tolerable excuse, she said.
Trent stopped standing to attention and collapsed into a nearby lawn chair. Helen knelt next to him and produced a cold washcloth to soothe his damp brow.
Where did you get that?
Trent asked, because she hadn't had it on her while he was kissing her.
I snuck off and grabbed it while you were being interrogated. Thought it might be useful.
Trent kissed her hand in thanks for her tender ministrations.
I think I'm going to be sick, Lorelei said to no one in particular.
Severity.
Call me Lorelei. Everyone else here does, she said.
Lorelei, what will we do now?
Do? We're going to go kill a dragon, is what we're going to do.
Chapter 4
She's horrible, Amy said as Magnus laid down next to her. He put his arms around her and held her as she sobbed into his shoulder.
It's going to be okay, sweetness.
How?
We're rich. We can buy happiness.
I thought you couldn't buy happiness.
That's just what poor people say.
You used to say that.
I used to be poor,
Magnus pointed out with equanimity. They killed a unicorn, a bunch of them, as a sacrifice to their dark gods. How can we help them?
It was that or they killed Helen and me.
But aren't some things worth dying for? Amy asked plaintively.
Well, yes. You.
You mean that?
You know I do. Remember when I told you to run and I was going to hold off the Allosaur? All I cared about was you being okay.
But what about the rest of the multiverse and unicorns?
Fuck 'em, Magnus said.
You're an asshole, she said lovingly and threw her arms around him.
Their lips met in a soft kiss, breathing in each other's breath. They held each other close, and she felt him stiffen against her pussy, even through her denim skirt.
He kissed her neck, and feeling her push her hips tighter against him, he slipped his hand under her shirt, toying with her nipple.
Her hand slipped inside his bathing trunks and freed his cock. Her soft hands caressed and stroked him as he bit her neck. She writhed in his arms, and her sudden squeeze nearly brought him. He slid her skirt up, and she wasn't wearing any panties. She guided him inside her, her pussy squeezing deliciously around his cock. She slid astride him, her breasts swaying beguilingly. He savored the sweet smell of her hair as he bit hard against her neck, making her writhe some more, which felt even better as she clenched his cock. She pushed herself off of him till she only rode the tip, then plunged back down, engulfing him in her slick pussy.
"Fuck me harder,"
she cried as now she leaned down to bite him hard on the chest. That pushed him over the edge, and he spurted inside her as fireworks exploded behind his eyes. She slid off his softening cock, and he put his fingers over her clit. She was primed, and a few light touches as she continued to bite his chest brought her to a loud climax. And then another. She collapsed contentedly into the crook of his arm when Lorelei strode through the door.
"Serious, you people. I was concerned you were upset, and you're rutting like rabbits."
"Well, what can you expect from pets?" Amy said, undaunted.
"You're just being pettish. Still, what you say is true nonetheless."
"Regardless, is this a private orgy, or can anyone join in?"
"Is that seriously manners where you come from?"
"Don't be ridiculous. I'm a priestess. If I want to join an orgy, I just join in," she humphed.
"Have to ask," she muttered to herself.
"Come on, don't be mad, sweetling," she said to Amy, kissing the back of her neck as she settled down on the bed. "We've been getting along so well," she murmured into her ear.
Amy tried to sidle away, but as she was draped around Magnus, she didn't have much room to sidle to. Besides, it felt really good, as did those deft long fingers sliding under her shirt and teasing her nipples. She felt like she could climax from just the feel of those long fingernails teasing her breast and nipple. Just there. And those soft, lingering kisses. And suddenly she was spasming beneath the deft elf's touch.
"That's so unfair," Amy said, shuddering.
Magnus writhed, too, as Amy's writhing pushed her breasts over his chest, her nipples tickling along his. Seeing her respond to Lorelei's kisses almost against her will was getting him hard again, stiffening against her hip.
"That's not unfair," Lorelei corrected. "This is unfair." And her long, supple fingers invaded Amy's pussy, finding her clit immediately and teasing it, stroking it, while she continued her kisses along Amy's throat, each kiss setting her mind afire and melting her resistance.
"That's my sweetling," Lorelei cooed. "Who's your mistress?"
"You are," Amy breathed.
"Good girl," Lorelei whispered into her ear, and suddenly Amy was coming all over again, an orgasm that came in wave after wave, cresting through her whole body, shuddering and trembling till she collapsed against Magnus, completely spent.
"She's fun," Lorelei said, smiling. Her hand reached out to caress Magnus's twitching cock. "How's my other pet, needing his mistress's attention?"
Some sense of loyalty to Amy prevented him from answering aloud, but his cock juddered in the air, reaching for her touch regardless. Her icy white fingers slid a nail along the head and shaft, and it grew even larger beneath her touch.
"Oh, very nice," she said approvingly,
gently but firmly sliding the nearly comatose Amy to the other side of the bed. She slid herself over the inviting cock, drawing her long fingernails down Magnus's chest, drawing blood as his skin parted beneath her sharp, expert touch. Magnus let out a soft screech somewhere between pleasure and pain, a liminal road he always found himself traversing with Lorelei. He felt breath tickle his cheek as Amy began snoring loudly, blowing one of her red curls out of her face, only to have it settle once more over her forehead. He smiled fondly at his girlfriend.
"Attention,"
Lorelei said in a harsh whisper. He focused on the vivid violet eyes of his mistress as she began to raise off and then impale herself on his throbbing cock. Thoughts of Amy vanished beneath the sensual onslaught as he felt himself grow even harder at the exquisite sensation. Blood pooled on his chest as she dug new crimson streaks with her long ebon nails. She leaned down towards him, her breasts swaying before his eyes, and lowered them to his lips. He sucked on her nipples as she rode him, now just circling her hips over his cock and down, grinding against him in short, slow strokes.
She could tantalize and tease him, stoke him to the edge and keep him there forever, or at least till she felt like letting him have release. She kissed him lightly, tongue flickering over his lips, teasing him, making him ache for more of her kiss, more of her. She pulled back and let him suck her finger, eager for any taste of her exquisite skin as she began to move faster, plunging harder against him till he felt even closer to the edge. She took mercy on him and plunged a final time, bringing herself to climax and letting him join her in release. He moaned softly and twitched beneath her as she dismounted him, sliding in between her two pets, enjoying their sleepy warmth as she cuddled Magnus's back, with Amy cuddled against her own without quite waking up, the redhead throwing one of her thin arms over her waist in unconscious tenderness. Lorelai raked her nails down Magnus's back, enjoying the thin red streaks. She licked eagerly at the fresh blood, then drifted off to sleep in contentment. Chapter 5. Amy rode atop an ankylosaurus as they stealthily approached the lair of the dragon.
"Ow, my feet hurt," Helen complained.
"Okay, maybe not as stealthily as all that."
"Then maybe you shouldn't have worn heels," Trent suggested helpfully.
"This is what passes for our first date. I'm wearing fashionable shoes," she retorted sharply. Though they were actually leather boots, with just the slightest of heels as a concession to fashion. Helen's wits were as sharp as her tongue, and she wouldn't put fashion over safety. Over comfort, though? Perhaps just a tad.
"Why couldn't we get horses? They always ride horses in fantasy novels," Magnus asked, eyeing Amy's mount jealously.
"Can you ride a horse?" Lorelai asked innocently.
"No, but that's beside the point."
"How is that beside the point?" she asked.
"I was hoping you wouldn't notice that," he replied, and Lorelai actually chortled. Perhaps for the first time since he'd met her when she'd seduced and then tortured him, he saw the faintest flush of what might be self-consciousness or embarrassment on her cheeks. Wisely, he didn't comment on it.
"Are you blushing?" he asked.
Well, it wasn't like he didn't know better. His tongue just seemed to do whatever the hell it wanted most of the time. Magnus thought of the wandering his tongue had done lately and thought that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Her glare eventually penetrated his libidinous thoughts, and he tried for an air of innocent insouciance.
"Well, even if you could ride a horse, most horses would have bolted at the scent of dragon, throwing you off and maybe killing you in the process."
"And that would make you sad?"
"You have your uses. And until we undo the cordoning spell, you're our only means of returning to and from our world." Magnus beamed. "Though I imagine Helen could run the machine if we absolutely had to kill you. Though I imagine Helen could run the machine if we absolutely had to kill you."
Lorelai mused out loud, causing Magnus to look so crestfallen that she laughed again, but this time her normal silvery seductive giggle that promised pain and pleasure in a mix yet to be determined.
"So why doesn't Enki get scared?" Amy wanted to know.
"Because he's too stupid to know better," Trent offered.
The ankylosaurus rumbled and thumped its tail on the ground.
"He doesn't understand what you just said, does he?" Magnus asked.
"Didn't you say he was psychic and could pick up my thoughts?" Amy asked.
"I did, but that was to Helen in a brief aside. I should have clarified that he's more empathic."
"He can sympathize with our problems and share cheesecake?" Helen teased.
"No, in a psychic sense, an empath can sense and sometimes project emotions. Instead of reading defined thoughts, they sense the underlying emotional context."
"So he doesn't know how he's been insulted, but can pick up the negative vibe, so to speak,"
from Amy.
"Well, I would never say vibes, but yes," Trent said.
Cool,
Amy said, and scratched Anki vigorously behind the ear, and his tail waggled like a dog, knocking down a few mid-sized trees as they passed.
I guess that's why he likes Amy so much and hated me on sight, Magnus said.
Well, partly, Lorelei weighed in.
Partly?
Asked Amy.
Yes, partly you had entirely positive emotions and he responded. But this much loyalty, this much affection, that's not so readily explained. I believe it relates to the influence you wield over Magnus and Helen.
What?
Chorused Helen and Magnus.
Influence Magnus, I get. She wields the power of the pussy. But me? How am I influenced?
Helen, you're a self-described amoral sociopath, true?
True.
And yet you care about Amy, what she thinks of you, and try to protect her. You even want her to think you're a good person and felt bad about explaining how you've unleashed a horde of dark elves who worship insane gods upon the quantum multiverse.
More like re-unleashed, but yes.
Doesn't that strike you as atypical behavior?
Lorelei probed.
Not previously, but when you put it like that, very atypical.
Someone's got a crush,
Magnus sing-songed. And you, Lorelei turned her violet eyes and laser-like focus on him. You said you were willing to die to protect Amy, even though you're a selfish, lecherous cheat.
Well, yeah,
Magnus agreed to both parts.
Is that like you?
Well, no, but that's love, right?
Would you die for me? She asked.
Hell no, he said readily.
You mean you don't love me?
She asked, batting her eyes and pouting her lips in a very sexy way.
I hadn't thought about it,
he stuttered, reacting to that look, even though he knew it was artifice, though perhaps not entirely artificial.
So you do love your mistress? She said with a wide, cruel, very sexy smile.
Yes, he said simply.
But would you die for me?
No,
he admitted, slightly embarrassed.
See?
She asked brightly.
Huh?
He said, completely confused by her whiplashing moods.
You would die for Amy, and that's extremely out of character for you, and you can't explain it by just calling it love. Elementary, my dear Crick, she said.
That's Watson, Helen corrected.
Whatever, I get all of your biologists confused, she went on blithely. I think Amy is part elf.
What?
Amy, Helen, Magnus, and Trent chorused.
That was good.
You guys could form... What was that bit from the Music Man you made me watch, Magnus?
A barbershop quartet?
Yes, four-part harmony.
You guys are good.
How can I be an elf? Amy asked.
Not an elf, part elf. Somewhere in your family tree, one of our nauseatingly benevolent cousins seduced one of your human ancestors. Happens all the time. And you inherited some of their magic. It comes out in some generations, skips others. Helen explained some of your understandings of genetics and mutation when we watched that documentary on Sherlock Holmes.
You mean Watson and Crick?
Whatever, Lorelei breezed. Anyway, I think that's why you inspire this insipid loyalty and goodness in those around you, and, of course, charm dumb animals at the drop of a hat.
The Ankylosaurus hissed at Lorelei, who merely glared back at the giant turtle-shaped creature.
I'm an elf?
Amy repeated dazedly.
Part elf,
Helen reminded her.
Part elf? That's still pretty amazing. Wonder what else I can do, she said.
I'm not sure, but I think you can do a lot more. I'm willing to teach you.
Teach me?
Well, teach you magic. There's so much I've already taught you, she said, licking her lips.
Amy flushed and ducked her head, embarrassed, but also turned on.
So, where's this dragon lair?
She said, trying to change the subject.
Oh, that. We're here. On your guard, everyone.
And sure enough, there was a loud roar, and the sky was darkened as huge wings momentarily overshadowed the sun. Chapter 6.
Shit, 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 shit! Expletive, expletive, expletive! Fuck!
Magnus yelled, literally running out of curse words as the terrifying creature filled the sky. Lorelei channeled the eldritch forces she'd been tapping from this world and created an orange glowing sphere around them that repelled the searing flames the dragon exhaled at them. Trent swung Amy off of the Ankylosaurus as it rumbled through the transparent sphere and swung its heavy tail at the dragon, which it easily flapped its wings back to avoid. Then it lashed out with its own tail at the giant spike-shelled creature and let out a shriek of pain as its heavy scales proved inadequate protection when it hit the spiked shell. It spun away and flew higher into the sky, and a few drops of purple ichor marked its passage.
"Does that count as fumets?"
Amy asked weakly, steady on her feet only by the support of Trent's strong arms.
"Don't you dare swoon into his arms, missy," Helen said. "Get your own elf boyfriend."
"Or girlfriend," Lorelei murmured softly.
"That doesn't answer my question," she said.
"Sure, I'd say it counts as fumets. It dropped from a dragon, didn't it?"
Magnus answered.
"Why does it matter?" Trent asked.
"Wind in the door,"
Amy and Ellen answered as one.
"Jinx," said Amy.
"I owe you a Coke," Helen conceded.
"Why didn't you warn us?"
Magnus demanded of Lorelei.
"What fun would that be?"
she asked blandly. She left him sputtering as she spoke to Trent in a hushed conference about their next move. Anki, meantime, realizing his quarry was well out of reach, was nuzzling against Amy's hand.
"I think you really are part elf," Helen said.
Chapter 7.
"Look sharp!"
Lorelei's call cut keenly through all conversation, and we all glanced at the sky. A roar building in its long, sinuous throat, the dragon was plummeting towards us again. Trent drew a long, shining blade from his over-the-shoulder sheath. Magnus pulled a familiar metallic device with a series of buttons and dials on the side. Amy and Helen ducked behind trees, and Lorelei pulled a dagger black as onyx and made a series of mystical gestures with her other hand. The brave Ankylosaurus, faced with an opponent completely outside of its evolutionary experience, nonetheless recognized the jaws of a large predator and attempted to put its armored self between those it thought of as its herd. The dragon pulled up out of its dive and rained fiery breath down upon the dinosaur, who completely ignored the fire and bowled into the large saurian form of the dragon and lashed out with its mace-like heavy tail. It caught the dragon solidly on its side just below the wing, and the dragon let out a hiss of pain.
"I don't think I've ever heard that before," Trent said. "A dragon making noises of pain."
"Usually those who do don't survive to remember it," Lorelei said.
"So what's the plan?" Trent asked.
"Shield," she replied. "Now!" And made a strange gesture with her hand as Trent mirrored her, and suddenly a blue shell emerged over the group, reflecting what looked like bolts of lightning raining down upon them. The dragon hissed again, this time in frustration.
"What was that?"
Magnus yelled.
"Dragons can wield magic as well as just breathe fire," she said.
"I like how you say, just breathe fire, as if that was a little thing."
"Well, it is, relatively."
"And here I was already scared out of my gourd at the breathing fire part."
"This is why I didn't tell you how close we were. You'd have been overwhelmed with fear."
"Since when is that not one of your favorite things?"
"Since I need you to break out that lovely dinosaur prod and tase the son of a bitch."
"That's the plan?"
"That's the plan. Now go be a hero for me."
"I'm not a hero."
"You are today. Go make your mistress happy."
"This was so not in our deal,"
Magnus grumbled, but he hefted his dinosaur prod, for that's what he called the device he designed to keep away over-curious dinosaurs when he planned to take Amy for a visit into a quantum universe with an Earth still populated with dinosaurs. Though apparently somewhat different dinosaurs, with muted telepathy and an affinity for half-elf redheads and left the protective shell to face the dragon. Anki made friendly noises at him for the first time, perhaps sensing his impending suicidal plan. The dragon, seeing finally a non-armored and bite-sized prey, swooped down towards him, moving far faster than Magnus had imagined. Some type of midnight black bolts of energy leapt from Lorelei's hand towards the dragon, who merely narrowed his eyes at them and the bolts sizzled out to nothingness. Trent unleashed gale force winds to slow the dragon down, but those too dissolved as the dragon effortlessly channeled the magic of his world to undo them. The Ankylosaurus moved to interpose, so the dragon unleashed its flaming breath at the dinosaur. The Ankylosaurus shrugged off the fire that burned its own scales and made the spikes and shell on its back glow red, not so much out of bravery as Ankylosaurs don't have the brain power or body type for sudden change of plans. The dragon stared in amazement as the Ankylosaurus continued to plod forward, undeterred by the searing flesh and undoubtable agony. The dragon had seen magical deflection and immunity to its fire annoyingly numerous times. But to see a creature shrug off the damage from just sheer physical resilience was unheard of. Irritated beyond measure, the dragon forgo the tasty morsel for the moment, landed, and met the dinosaur's charge, ducking its sinuous head low underneath the club-like tail as it passed overhead, and with its claws and probably a bit of magic, flipped up the Ankylosaurus up and over onto its back. Anki howled in frustration, and then as realization of its burning flesh slowly dawned as neurons found its brain to relay highly unusual pain sensations, and for that same brain to figure out what it meant, and it tore at Amy's heartstrings to see her pet in such pain. She poured the water from her canteen over the Ankylosaurus, trying to put out the flames in spots they still smoldered. The dragon howled in triumph over its physically stronger foe. Now it remembered that tasty morsel of a man, just as said morsel planted the dinosaur prod against its scales and triggered it for full power. Now the dragon howled in something more akin to agony than triumph, as its muscles locked as an electronic surge completely outside of its experience coursed through its nervous system. Its joints locked up in place, and despite its usual savage grace, teetered and fell on its side, wings refusing to flap. "Now!" Lorelei called out, and again bolts of midnight darkness leapt from her hand, and this time speared into the dragon's side, eliciting another hiss of pain. Trent charged in long, springing strides, crossing the distance in seconds, and slashing with the shining argent sword at the dragon's snout. It pulled its long neck back and barely dodged the attack. Clearly slowed by the wounds, it nonetheless clawed lightning fast at the elf, who seemed like a fast-moving puppy nipping at his heels. Trent dodged, only to have a backhand by the same claw knock him off his feet. As the dragon raised his claw to spear him into the ground, Trent lifted his arm and pointed, furrowing his brow and closing his eyes. The dragon contorted as the psychic attack amplified the pain from its wounds. Magnus sprinted away, barely clearing the tail as it lashed back and forth as the dragon contorted its huge body as pain racked it in waves. Not knowing where to go, he headed towards Helen and Amy, the girls gathered by Anki and scooping dirt on the wounded flesh having run out of water. The flames had gone out, and the cool mud they were making seemed to soothe the creature. He didn't even have the strength to hiss menacingly as Magnus approached, like usual.
"What's he doing?"
Amy asked Helen, eyeing Trent's strange posture. "Probably trying some kind of psychic attack on the dragon."
"Is that a good idea?"
"Probably not," Helen said, and proved quite oracular as the next moment Trent was grabbing his head and screaming. Magnus eyed the wounded dinosaur and dark elf with a special concern as blood was leaking from the eyes and ears of the elf.
"Trent!"
yelled Helen with what sounded suspiciously like genuine concern, and ran over to the mentalist.
The dragon roared in triumph and began to slowly stalk towards Magnus and Amy. He pulled out the only other device he'd brought with him, the remote version of the quantum gate opening machine, which enabled them to cross back to the house in the Hamptons where the prototype now resided. As it made a gate, there was no way they could get the dinosaur across, which meant he'd probably have to carry Amy, he thought, as she wouldn't willingly leave her beloved pet's side. The dragon approached, grinning evilly.
Now or never,
Magnus thought to himself, and finger hovered over the button when the dragon's snorts of pleasure turned into new howls of agony. Lorelei slowly faded back into sight, and her obsidian blade was somehow glowing an even darker hue as she pulled it from deep into the wounded side where she'd plunged it, taking advantage of the breaks in the scaly hide the Ankylosaurus had caused. The dragon heeled back and flapped its wings at the sudden, horrible sensations, more from the magic than the blade, though she'd managed to plunge deep into one of the creature's internal organs. The dragon cursed the elf in Lorelei's own language, the harsh, grating syllables that the elf used to cast her magic. Then it channeled a sizzling bolt of eldritch energy at her that she easily countered, the dragon's magic greatly weakened by the wounds it had suffered, and the darkly ensorcelled blade she'd plunged in its side. The dragon cried out in roars and hisses as it felt the corrupt blade sapping its strength and poisoning it from the inside. It tried to bite at Lorelei, but its neck flopped weakly to the ground, followed shortly after by its body. The dark elf priestess began to draw strange sigils and runes upon the dragon's scales in its own scarlet blood. When she reached into its wound and pulled something out that resembled a giant human heart, Magnus threw up. Amy shrieked, and Helen, who was still tending Trent, merely looked interested.
Chapter 8.
With the dragon dead and sacrificed to Cthulhu or whatever insane elder god the Dark Elf Priestess was trying to curry favor with that day, Trent began to recover. Magnus joined Amy in trying to pack mud onto Enki's seared flesh, mindful of how the Ankylosaur had likely saved his life from the stooping dragon. His breath caught in his throat at the memory of the terrifying creature bearing down on him. Amy wrapped her arms around him and hugged him hard as she saw the color blanch from his face.
"I'm so proud of you," she murmured into his neck.
"I was fucking terrified," he confided in her.
"That's why I'm proud. Being terrified and doing it anyway? If it wasn't hard, it wouldn't be an accomplishment."
"True," he conceded.
He hugged her back, relishing being alive and the feel of her softness, her small, firm curves fitting wonderfully in his arms. They held each other, just enjoying the warm comfort of each other after Amy's first taste of life-or-death combat. Magnus himself had only experienced that a few weeks ago when he'd found himself on the wrong end of extreme corporate cost-cutting. Suddenly he jerked as he felt arms wrap around him from behind, but a soft hand on the back of his neck and familiar sexy whisper told him it was just Lorelei joining the cuddle. He wondered if she did so because even she could use some comfort after facing the daunting monster. Or is she just enjoying leeching some of the comfort from Amy by joining? Probably both, he thought to himself as the dark elf was demonstrably complex in her motivations. Then she moved her hands over his hips and pressed herself tightly against his back and ass, and he was completely distracted from speculating about her motives.
"Hi,"
Amy said.
"Hi yourself," Lorelei purred. To Magnus, she said, "You did well out there." "Thanks," he said.
"So how's my little bright elf doing?" "I'm doing fine, though I won't believe I'm an elf till I cast a spell." "That's fine. I'll start teaching you how when we get back, soon as I scout through its hold and see if I can find the artifact it was guarding."
"And unleash your fellow dark elves on the multiverse?"
"Exactly,"
Lorelei agreed.
"I
"Think we've had enough fighting for one day,"
Magnus said to the girls, trying to stop their rivalry from boiling over. That their rivalry seemed to focus on him as often as not, he found about as flattering as he did terrifying, especially if Amy learned to truly cast magic, too.
"That's true," Lorelai conceded. She sidled around so that she could put her arm around Ginger as well as around Magnus, and kissed Amy lightly on the neck. Amy tried to wriggle away, but not very hard, and was leaning into Lorelai by the third kiss on her neck. Then she turned and let the dark elf kiss her softly on the lips, which grew into a searching, probing kiss that Lorelai at last had to tear herself away from to search the hoard. After packing some more mud and pouring some more of their water from their packs onto Anki, Magnus and Amy took their highly stimulated selves to search for some urgently needed privacy. While looking, they heard some muffled gasps that indicated Trent and Helen had already found some.
Chapter 9. When Amy and Magnus returned to the group, Lorelai was excitedly showing off to Trent some of the arcane objects she'd found in the dragon's lair. Trent seemed equally enthused, though Helen seemed like she was having trouble staying awake. She yawned and then noticed them and enthusiastically waved them over.
"About time you two showed up," she said dryly.
Amy said nothing but merrily added a flounce to her step and then dropped down on the ground beside Helen.
"Sorry, got tied up,"
was all she said, but she beamed widely at Lorelai.
"I bet," Lorelai said. "So what's our plan now?"
Trent asked.
"Have you figured out how to use the artifact to break the spell? Or should we take the artifact home using Magnus's ingenious device so they can break it there?"
"Well, I can't break the spell, and the artifact is still intact, which I think could be enough for them to break the spell from the inside, which means we don't have to take on another incredibly powerful creature to defeat the spell."
"Well, that's good news," Magnus said, "as the dragon nearly killed us all, which would have left us four short of all future foursomes."
"Orgies," Helen corrected.
"I was trying to make the numerical point, but thanks for correcting my semantics."
"Anytime," Helen breezed.
"To return to our plan, before we get out of here, which should be soon, as I'm certain that the demise of a creature as powerful as a dragon won't go unnoticed by this world's thaumaturgists for much longer. But I'm not sure that we should in fact undo the spell after all. After consultation with the Elder Gods, when I sacrificed the dragon, I believe they may have other purposes for the artifact."
Amy beamed at the news they might not be unleashing a plague of death and destruction across the multiverse.
"Bullshit," Trent said angrily, leaping to his feet. Before Lorelai could respond, he pointed his arm out towards her and her every muscle seized in place. "You think I can't tell a power play? You've decided with the power of the dragon horde you can make yourself a queen and you don't want any rivals. Or maybe you've gotten too attached to your new human pets. Either way, I won't let you turn your back on our people. Helen, grab my knife from my belt. I can't divert any of my attention or she'll be able to overcome my psychic hold. I need you to cut her throat."
"What? Why?"
"I formally challenged her, and amongst our people, those are always to the death. It's her or me. She's gone mad with ambition. It happens to our people when they're exposed to too much power. I never should have let her go to the Horde alone. Please, Helen, I can't hold her much longer."
"All right,"
she said, grabbing the wickedly sharp blade from his belt.
"Helen, no!"
Amy cried out, horrified at the thought of casual murder before her eyes.
"I'm afraid I have to," Helen said to Amy.
Then in one smooth motion, she drew the blade across Trent's throat. He didn't even have time to say a word, just a sad, deep gurgle as blood clogged his throat. Lorelai tossed a wink to Helen and gathered up Magnus and Amy in her arms. Chapter 10. Magnus crushed her tight in his arms, wrapping her up and squeezing with all his wiry strength, sensing that perhaps she might need comfort as she'd never had before.
Amy stared horrified at her friend, stepping out of Lorelai's embrace.
But he was your boyfriend, and you just cut his throat? How could you?
We'd only had one date, and fucked a couple of times. That doesn't make him my boyfriend.
It makes him something, but you just butchered him like a hog. How?
Because he was like every male elf I've met, thinking that once he's fucked me with his big smooth cock, that I'm going to be a submissive little thing fawning all over him.
I think that's all males, not just elves,
Amy said.
It's true, Lorelai said. That's just how Magnus is with me.
And so saying, she kissed his neck and then bit hard and fast like a rattlesnake and continued to squeeze tight with her jaws. His pale neck began to immediately bruise and blood leaked liberally around her mouth. Magnus cried out in something between pain and pleasure and dropped to his knees.
I'm just putty in his hands, aren't I, Magnus?
Yes, mistress, he replied.
She petted his hair absently as he put his hand to his neck and made whispered pain noises.
I had every confidence in Helen, she said to Amy.
That was your plan?
Amy asked.
Not a plan so much as inspiration. He was going to be a problem, and he's a powerful psychic and trained warrior. I didn't dare trust him with my back turned if I intended to change the plan, so I had to see where he stood. And it turned out he's very loyal to our people. But I knew Helen would see through his superficial charms and understand who she really could trust.
Trust? Ha! Helen said. I don't trust you as far as I can shit. But for some reason, you have looked out for us so far, and I know for damn sure I trust you more than him. Can you believe he called us your pets and then acted like I'd kill for him as casually as he'd asked me to bring him a cup of coffee? What an asshole.
He wasn't wrong, though. I think I have gone a little soft-hearted. But I like your city. And when we went shopping together, well, I've never had female friends before. Or any friends, really. Just rivals and sex partners. It's interesting, and I'm not ready to give that up. Besides, I like being the most powerful dark elf abroad in the multiverse. Especially with all these new toys to play with.
Like that artifact? What's it do, anyway?
Oh, you'll find out. Eventually.
And Lorelai cackled with good-natured, evil laughter.
I may have made a huge mistake, Helen muttered to herself.
Oh, come on,
Lorelai said, and pulled Magnus up to his feet.
We've got to get back to our house in the Hamptons. We haven't even had sex in the hot tub yet.
We haven't?
Magnus asked, confused, because he was pretty certain they'd had.
We have, Lorelai agreed, but we haven't.
Foursome,
Amy said with a squee of enthusiasm. Orgy, Helen corrected. Anki whined plaintively at the thought of Amy leaving him.
What are we going to do about Anki? Amy asked.
Well, I was planning on leaving him here to guard the hoard, but I've already gotten what I want from it, and the mages coming probably won't be deterred by even a formidable guard such as Anki. I guess he has to come with us.
But how? Amy asked.
Lorelai waved her hand absently and spoke in her harsh native language, and suddenly Anki coruscated with light and began to waver in form. A moment later, he was still the same shape, but vastly smaller. He stood only 4 inches high and tip to tail only about a foot. Amy scooped him up and squeed again.
I love it! He's adorable!
Eventually I'll teach you how to grow him back to his full size in an instant.
Squee!
Amy said. Did you just say squee? Helen asked.
No,
Amy lied. Good, Helen said.
This has been Dark Elves, Dragons, and Dinosaurs, written by Amanda Lash, narrated by Mara J. Eden. Copyright 2014 by Amanda Lash. Production copyright 2017 by Hyperbolic Productions.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.